Good morning, Lillooet, and happy St. Patrick's Day. Welcome to another day of live broadcasting here on CHLS 100.5 FM. My name is Jeff O'Kelly. This program is Snooze Button, and I'll be with you until 9 o'clock. We started with music by François Couperin, composer from the latter part of the 17th, early part of the 18th centuries. You've heard him here very often on Snooze Button before. And that was a piece called Les Ombres Errantes. That would mean literally the wandering shadows. However, the word ombre in French, it's in the plural form here, but the in the singular, it can mean also shade in the ghostly sense, like a ghost. And so these could be the wandering ghosts. Not really sure which Couperin meant. As I've discussed so often, the titles that he gave to his harpsichord pieces are semi-indistinguishable, or they can't be figured out what they mean nowadays. There's a word for that I'm looking for. Incomprehensible. That's, there it is. Anyway, yeah, he wrote those for harpsichord, of course, but we heard it played on the piano with French pianist Alexandre Tarot, and we'll come back and hear him in another piece by Couperin in a few minutes. Right now it is time for weather and road reports. Yesterday's low, minus 2.4. The high made it up to 13.8. We managed to almost squeeze 3 extra degrees out of the forecast. It'd be nice if we could do the same thing today. No guarantees, though. As of 7 a.m., the temperature is sitting at plus 1. And Environment Canada is predicting that today will be mainly cloudy. Wind from the south at 30 kilometers per hour this afternoon. A high today of 14 degrees. Tonight, cloudy, becoming partly cloudy near midnight. Wind from the south at 30, becoming light this evening, a low tonight of 5 degrees. Tomorrow, a mixture of sun and cloud, clearing late in the afternoon. Wind from the south at 30 kilometers per hour, gusting to 50 in the afternoon, then light in the evening. A high tomorrow of 15. Thursday, cloudy with a low of plus 4, a high of 16. Friday, a mixture of sun and cloud, a low of 6, a high of 15. And at this point, Saturday, predicted to be cloudy with a 60% chance of showers, a low of 7 and a high of 16. So not as sunny as one might wish, but still pretty nice, and temperature is very comfortable. Taking a look at conditions across the country and around the province, let's see, Halifax, minus 5 degrees and mostly cloudy. They're getting a little bit of a chill going on there, and the Maritimes, Fredericton, is at minus 12 right now. Montreal, light snow and plus 1. Toronto, plus 1 as well, mostly cloudy. Iqaluit, still enjoying some relief from the cold. Drifting snow and minus 7 degrees there. Winnipeg is minus 5 and partly cloudy. Regina, mainly sunny and minus 4. Yellowknife, still the coldest place in the country, or at least on this list. Minus 29 degrees and mainly sunny there. Edmonton is minus 5 and sunny. Calgary, mostly cloudy and minus 6. Whitehorse, minus 4 and partly cloudy. Prince George is clear and minus 6. And a little closer to home, Clinton, clear and minus 1. Hope, plus 3 and clear. Kamloops, mostly cloudy and 5 degrees, minus 2 degrees in Pemberton, and Vancouver is mostly cloudy and 5 degrees. And let me just update my Drive BC website here. Let's see, on the highways, Highway 1, there's a big note here about Highway 1. This has to do with that area where there's been rock fall near Boston Bar, 11.5 kilometers west of Boston Bar. The highway is currently open. However, the Ministry of Transportation is actively monitoring the area for the potential of falling rock. A rockfall warning is in place, and the highway may be closed without advance notice to ensure the safety of motorists. The Ministry will provide updates on this condition as the assessment continues. And so that speed zone, actually it doesn't even say there's a speed zone here anymore on the note. It just says watch for fallen rock on the road, but I suspect that speed zone is still in effect, that it's a 60-kilometer speed zone there. And the only other note I have is about the sweeper with water truck and pilot vehicle working from Spence's Bridge to Cache Creek. Today should be the last day of that, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. And that's it for weather and roads. All right, let's go back to François Couperin, born in 1668, died in 1733. Couperin's music played on the piano, it can be something of an iffy prospect. You have to choose, but choose wisely. And you have to have a real understanding of the style, so many aspects of the style as well. A lot of Couperin's music, as I say, he was writing for the harpsichord, and a lot of his music doesn't fit all that comfortably on the piano. I mean, it certainly fits within the range of keys, because the The range of the keyboards of Couperin's time were considerably smaller than that of the 88-key modern piano. But his writing for the harpsichord, and especially his left-hand parts, there's a kind of delicacy to them and subtlety to them that is not all that well suited to the piano. It's not in all of his left-hand parts, but it's in many of them. By the time you go a few years later to the music of Jean-Philippe Rameau, who I think was born around 1680 or so, by the time of Rameau, his left-hand parts become wider-ranging and I guess I would say more robust than those of Couperin, and they are very well suited to the piano. Nevertheless, I've been listening recently to a number of different pianists playing music by Couperin on the piano, and as long as they choose wisely, I think it works. The other trick with Couperin is the unbelievable profusion of ornaments, little twiddles and trills and mordants and things like that that are put on the notes. And the music is, when you look at it on the page, it really seems to be quite thickly encrusted with them. So anybody who's playing this music has to know exactly what the composer meant by those particular symbols. Anyway, I think Alexandre Tarot here has done a good job. He's most importantly, he's chosen the music, the pieces that he would play very wisely. He's not trying to imitate the harpsichord here. He goes ahead and freely uses the pedal, which is something a harpsichord, of course, did not have. And he's willing to make various gradations of dynamic, which the harpsichord dynamics, which the harpsichord wasn't able to do either. Let's hear a piece called Le Carillon de Citer. Hope I'm saying that right. Chimes, if you will, the chimes of Kythera, to put it in its proper Greek pronunciation. Kythera is one of the Greek islands, but it was mythologically believed to be the island of Aphrodite, a frequent place that she would like to repair to when not on Mount Olympus. I almost said Mount Everest. Okay, that's pretty bad. So these are, because it's Aphrodite, Venus we're talking about, these are somewhat amorous sounding chimes. There's a gently animated quality to it. Anyway, here once again is pianist Alexandre Tarot. Thank you. music of François Couperin. We heard another of his very beautiful pieces there. That's Le Carillon de Cythère, the Chimes of Cythera, and a recording there by French pianist Alexandre Tarot. Let's see, what are we at? 8:16, and I forgot to pull up the Radio Lillooet schedule here, so I will do that right now. And 1 second. It's not showing up. There we go. When Snooze Button wraps up, I will leave you with an episode of Bobcat Logic, and then we'll switch to music from the Jazz Blues Soul playlist after that. Around 10 o'clock, I'll switch things up to Studio One in the Lillooet Secondary School. Student broadcaster Raynell is heard there between about 10:15 and 12:15 on weekdays. More Jazz Blues Soul in the afternoon. Democracy Now! At 3 o'clock, an encore presentation of Music for the Middle Ages at 4 o'clock, and then music from the Rock Pop playlist after that. You can find all the details of the schedule on our website at radiolillooet.ca. And one thing I wanted to mention now, because I forgot to put it on the schedule, but I'll fix that up in just a couple of minutes, is that this Friday we'll see the return of the Six Mix with Lyle. That will be on Friday at 6 p.m. The Six Mix at 6, easy to remember. All right, let's move on, and we're going to turn now to Beethoven. And you may be wondering, where's the Irish stuff, Jeff? Well, when I was putting the show together, I forgot that it was St. Patrick's Day today. Just completely slipped my mind. I thought of it a few days earlier and thought, oh yes, I must remember to include something Irish. Fortunately, I was left with a few minutes of extra time in the music that I chose, so I decided to did pull in something Irish. We'll get to that at the end of the show. No, we're just kind of wandering around with Couperin, Beethoven, and Tchaikovsky for the first while. It's Beethoven we're going to turn to now, and we're going to hear the first movement of his piano trio in B-flat major, Opus 97. This is frequently referred to as the Archduke Trio. Music that comes from around 1810 or 1811. It's called the Archduke Trio because it was dedicated to Archduke Rudolf, who was the son of the Austro-Hungarian Emperor Leopold II. Sorry, Leopold II. Getting very confused here. This Archduke Rudolf, I think he later went on to become a cardinal in the church or something like that, was a cardinal, in fact, by the time that Beethoven knew him already. He seems to have been fairly musically talented. Beethoven was his teacher, piano teacher and composition teacher, and Archduke Rudolf seems to have been pretty capable performer and also at least a competent composer, but maybe not an inspired one. This is one of 14 compositions that Beethoven dedicated to the Archduke, so he must have felt some genuine affection for the man. This entire piano trio, and it's a fairly big piece. It's about a half hour long. It is some of the most healthy and life-affirming music I know by Beethoven, and really I find a huge amount of Beethoven's music to be healthy and life-affirming. But this is even more so than usual. There really just aren't any dark corners to be found in this piano trio. Here and there, he'll take the music into a minor key briefly for a passage or even for a page, but always brings it back to the major key, and that should make the piece seem like it is lacking in contrast. It should be a weakness that there aren't any real dark corners to contrast with how overall sunny the piece is. But with Beethoven, somehow it doesn't seem to matter. It still turns out to be an absolute masterpiece. This first movement marked Allegro Moderato, and I want to call your attention to one particular passage in it. The first movement of a piano trio like this one and of many classical compositions is in what's known as sonata allegro form, which has three big parts to it. The first part is the exposition, where usually two main themes are set out. They are exposed, they're made clear to us and stated in their full forms. And then comes a middle section, which is a development, which is where a composer will take apart, deconstruct those themes and use fragments of them and play those fragments upside down or move those fragments through different keys or combine two different fragments, that sort of thing. And then what comes after that is known as the recapitulation, where the original music or something very similar to it that was heard in the exposition comes back to round off the piece. There's a little bit more to it than that, but that's the basis. Anyway, at the end of the development section of this first movement that we're going to hear, Beethoven writes a passage in pizzicato for the strings, just plucking the strings. And the piano's involved in that as well, if I recall correctly, but it's mostly the strings. And usually with Beethoven, a passage like that will go on for a few bars. In this case, it seems to go on for pages. It's not really, but it goes on much longer than it normally would in such a piece. And it really builds a kind of suspense. But again, here we have this healthy, life-affirming nature of the piece I mentioned. The suspense is not waiting, is something bad going to happen? It is suspense that you know something as good is going to happen. You're just not quite sure when it's going to happen. And that's really the impression that it creates. And then when it finally does happen, it's when the strings stop playing pizzicato, and there's just a brief little transitional passage that leads from the pizzicato back to the main theme. And when the main theme comes back, you realize, that's what we were waiting for. And Beethoven's ever so slightly varies that main theme, but if you were paying close attention the first time and you pay close attention the second time, you will hear the difference. And it's just a small change, but there's something somehow miraculous about it. Anyway, one of my favorite pieces of chamber music, and I could go on about it at great length, but I better just let the music speak for itself. We'll listen to a recording with the Borodin Trio. I forgot to write down their names, but I believe they are Rostislav Dubinsky on violin, Yuli Turovsky on cello, and Maria Yudina on the piano. I may have the pianist's name wrong. I'll come back with that after I've checked. Thank you. music of Beethoven. We've been listening to the first movement that comes from his piano trio number, I can't remember, 7, something like that. Anyway, Opus 97 in B-flat major, also known as the Archduke Piano Trio, and I think one of the greatest pieces of chamber music ever written. That was a recording with the Borodin Trio, Rostislav Dubinsky on violin, Yuli Taraski on cello, and I did get the pianist's name wrong. I feel badly about that. It's Lyuba Edlina. She was at the time the wife of Rostislav Dubinsky when that recording was made. What are we at? 8:37. Let us do some public service announcements. We will start with the pool schedule for today. Everyone, welcome. 10:30 to 11:30. Whoops. Yeah, okay. I'm just checking here. I guess there's only one AquaFit class a week now. So everyone welcome 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Lane swimming 11:30 until 1. Everyone welcome 3:30 to 5. And Red Cross swimming lessons run between 5 and 7 p.m. Lane swimming 7 until 8 p.m. And yeah, looking at the schedule here, I only see AquaFit now on Friday mornings 9 until 10. There is a new set of the Red Cross swimming lessons that get underway today, but if you've missed them so far, this is not the last set. There will be one final set running April 14 through May the 7th. And let's see, soccer registration. There's one more chance for signing up for that at one of the booths. There will be a booth set up. This is for youth soccer. This will be tomorrow from 3 until 6 p.m. at Bilo Foods. For more information, get in touch with Natalie at 256-4525 or Ken at 256-7721. Oops, did I miss one there? Nope, not yet. Statlium Fisheries Forum, that is happening at Tlitkat Hall this Thursday, March the 19th, day after tomorrow, 8 until 3 p.m. And that's open to all Statlium Nation members. And the contact person, Janice Billy, who is the fisheries manager, give her a call at 256-7523 if you have questions. Also, the annual diabetes-friendly gathering, Pot of Greens, Rainbow of Foods, will be happening at the Hacklip Hall March 24, 25, 26, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day. And there will be a whole bunch of workshops and things around diabetes and other health issues, as well as door prizes, games, drumming, and I'm not sure what else, a whole bunch of things. You can find the more details about that in last Wednesday's edition of the Bridge River Lillooet News. And the next concert in Lillooet Music's 2014-2015 concert season, that's happening this Saturday, March the 21st, St. Andrew's United Church. It is the Sweet Lowdown. They are from Victoria, and they blend original songwriting and three-part harmonies with an old-time instrumental groove. Tickets are $20 if you buy them now in advance, $22 at the door, that's for adults, $5 for students. Tickets available from PharmaSave, KC Health, and IDA, and I suspect you are probably now too late to buy one of the dinner tickets. They needed to be bought a week before the performance, so I'm not even going to give you the details on that. And finally, the standard first aid and CPRC course, that is scheduled to happen here at the Rec Center again, scheduled for April 18 and 19. It's a 2-day course and runs from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. both days. The cost is $150 per person. That includes all your materials and GST and everything. Length of the class is a total of 14 to 16 hours. And you have to be in attendance 100% for both days in order to get your certificate and a 75% minimum passing grade on the written exam. If you'd like more information, get in touch with the Rec Center, 250. I've got a different number from than usual for them here, 250-256-7484 if you want to register for that class. When I talked to them late last week, they had a number of people signed up for it, but not quite yet enough for it to run ahead. They need a total of 6 people, I believe, to sign up for it, a minimum of 6 people. All right, that is it for public service announcements, and we're going to turn to Tchaikovsky now and hear the last half-ish, not quite, of the Symphony No. 4. I say not quite because the first movement is of the symphony is quite long, but we'll hear the third and fourth movements. This symphony written in 1877 or started in 1877. He finished it in 1878. Received its premiere, I believe, in St. Petersburg with Nikolai Rubinstein conducting. And I'm laughing when I say Nikolai Rubinstein because Nikolai Rubinstein and Tchaikovsky had a very uneasy relationship. I think both of them admired a great deal about the other, but Tchaikovsky, unfortunately, was always asking Nikolai Rubinstein to give him criticism about his own works, and Rubinstein would just open up and let fly, and he'd point to a few bars here or there and say, those are good, but the rest, well, anyway. But nevertheless, Tchaikovsky did respect him, and ultimately Rubinstein even came around to think that maybe his first opinion of some of those works had been mistaken. This symphony is in the key of F minor. It is sometimes referred to as the Symphony of Fate, and that's largely because of a fanfare motif that happens in the first movement and comes back, I believe, in this last movement, at least briefly. Which is supposedly representing the forces of fate. You know, Tchaikovsky, never the happiest of guys. Anyway, we will hear the third movement, which is the Scherzo. It's marked pizzicato ostinato, and in it you will hear the strings only playing pizzicato, plucking their bows. They just literally, in performance, they do put their bows right down on their music stands and just play by plucking. And then woodwinds and brass also have their own things to do in that movement, so it's very much a sectionalized kind of movement. And then the final movement, well, I guess, I don't know if Tchaikovsky was trying to dispel the malevolent forces of fate with this or not. To my ears, frankly, it always sounds like forced celebration. It sounds just a little not quite sincere. I could be wrong about that. Maybe he did mean it sincerely, but... this is the movement that I think is frequently referred to, or I think of certainly, as being a little bit on the bombastic side. Bombastic being something that's overstated and not quite as great as it thinks itself. Don't get me wrong. I think this is a magnificent symphony. I think every movement of it is a work of genius. But like I say, there's something about this final movement that I think Tchaikovsky was, to my ears, it sounds as if he was trying to suggest that he wasn't entirely sincere in the music. Anyway, that's just my particular take on it. If you ask a cymbal player what their take on Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony is, they will say they think it's one of the greatest pieces in the world, probably because of the huge number of cymbal crashes, most particularly to be heard in this final movement. Anyway, let's listen to a recording with the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra, and the conductor is Kazuyoshi Akiyama.
Thank you.
bombastic or not, you be the judge. Yep, I still think it is, but I do like the piece. It's very exciting. And I think that's a fantastic recording. We've been listening to the third and fourth movements of Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 4 in the key of F minor, though it ends very firmly in F major. And that recording featured the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra with Kazuyoshi Akiyama conducting. I don't claim to have listened to tons and tons of recordings of this symphony and compared them, but every time I listen to that one, all I know is that I don't spot anything that strikes me as seriously wrong with it, and I always enjoy it a great deal. All right, it's 9 a.m., so if that was a bit too much for you, we have something a little more relaxing to finish off with, and we're finally going to pay homage to the fact that it is St. Patrick's Day. And I guess I could have chosen something a little bit more obscure, but the arrangement of this is at least obscure. We're going to listen to the Irish tune from County Derry, also known as Danny Boy. But we're going to hear it in an arrangement for a wind and brass concert band, arranged by Percy Granger, probably sometime between 1920 and 1940, but I'm just guessing on that. Granger made a lot of arrangements of the same piece. He would pick one of his pieces, or a folk song in this case, and then arrange it for a lot of different forces. And this one, I believe, the Irish tune from County Derry, I think there are five or six different versions of it at least. The one that I know best is the one for piano. And I believe that this arrangement we're going to hear was Granger was working from his piano setting for it. The reason I say that is that in the piano setting, Granger embeds the melody, the tune of the piece, in the inner voices, and it requires a great deal of individual finger independence to play that way. You have to be able to summon different quantities of strength from each of your fingers, and so one finger on one hand might be having to play a note quite loudly, and another finger on that same hand might be having to play a different note much more softly. Very, very difficult thing to do, unless the really loud note is either played by the thumb or the little finger, then it's fairly easy. But if it's the middle fingers, it's really, really tricky. Anyway, in this arrangement, the same principle seems to apply, that the tune is embedded in the middle. You'll hear instruments playing notes that are higher than the melody, but they're playing more softly, so the melody comes through. It's a gorgeous arrangement, I think, and much more relaxing than the Tchaikovsky was. So here's the Royal Northern College of Music Wind Orchestra and conductor Timothy Rainish, music arranged by Percy Granger. Thank you. That was the Irish tune from County Derry, although obviously you will know it as Danny Boy. Music, well, we don't know who wrote it. Traditional, but arranged by Percy Granger for a wind and brass band. Royal Northern of College Music Wind Orchestra with Timothy Rainish conducting. And there were cymbals in that too, but not nearly. They were a lot more subtle than the ones used in Tchaikovsky. Okay, that is going to be it for today's edition of Snooze Button.